With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Jay Cross, do you have a spare $5 a month?
Often I do.
Then give it to me over at patreon.com/guitar nerds.
Why? What do I get?
You'll get, not only will you get the regular Guitar Nerds podcast early and ad free.
Okay. So the ads are annoying. You have to listen to me.
The ads are very annoying. But you'll also get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week.
Pray tell.
That means another half an hour of Joe Branton, another half an hour of Joey Branton. And another half, and I messed that bit up. Another half an hour of Jay Cross, another half an hour of me, and another half an hour of Matt Knight.
Is there no more Joe Branton?
There is. If you haven't got your Joe Branton content, then you can also listen to the miniseries Branton's Rant On, where Joe Branton talks about things he hates. Patreon.com/guitar nerds. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Well, hello there.
Jay Cross.
Oh, hello there.
And Joe Branton.
Hi.
Are you going to keel over at some point during this podcast?
No, I'm fine. What are you talking about?
Keen listeners to the Guitar Nerds podcast may hear that my voice is starting to go through illness. Joe Branton is about 100 times worse, and he looks like he's about to keel over on that chair at any moment. So if you hear like a loud crash and then Joe doesn't talk for the rest of the podcast, he has died. So
that tea that we fed him is working.
It's working.
Great.
Finally, the apothecary that I had to visit in Port Slade.
Everyone thinks that the poll that I put up this morning was for the Patreon content, when secretly there was another poll saying, should we off Joe Branton? And it was overwhelmingly yes. So,
unbelievable.
Yeah, you're gone.
Speaking of polls, I see that the one that I opted for won again this week on the
Patreon group. Yeah, yeah.
Well, when you say opted for, do you mean did you suggest it or did you vote for it?
I voted for it.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
All the suggestions come out of my brain. So
I don't really know that
they
you
were
can
bad choices
no,
again.
No, this week
two
was
weeks
good.
In a row of like no. bad topics.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Anyway, how's everyone doing? Matt Knight, are you all good?
I am. Yes. I had a lovely weekend. I've done nothing but marathon training, so
when is this marathon that you're doing?
I have to talk about. It is in 3.5 weeks. I've already done 80 miles this month, so
just
got another 50 to do this week.
Firstly, you're a madman. Secondly, if people want to sponsor you for doing marathon stuff, are you running for a charity or are you just running for...
I am not. I'm running for my own...
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Well, if you were thinking of donating to a charity, patreon.com.
If you want to donate to a charity, donate to my favourite. I have run them for a few times. Battersea Dogs and Cats Home.
Oh, there we go. See, you think he's a cold-hearted pedal assassin, but actually he's got a warm heart made
now
of
he's,
fluffy
now he's,
kittens.
Now he's got a cat.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
like, oh, right, I don't have to... It's like when you... Like a meeting, like the in-laws for the first couple of times, you've got to be polite, and then you find out that like you've got the same sort of interest, you can start swearing in front of them and stuff like that. Like Matt doesn't need to; he's got the cat now, so he doesn't need to you know, do something nice for the cats and dogs' homes.
Either that, or Poirot, Matt's cat, is holding him to ransom, and he's trying to send us signals through the Skype.
I think that's
saying,
what it is,
yeah,
yeah.
He's sort of being annoying right now.
Exactly. He's telling you that...
Rehome Praro.
The people have got to...
Donate to Bassy Cats.
Yeah, exactly. He's looking for a way out, and he wants his digs to be as cushy as possible when he gets there. So, anyway, Jay Cross, how are you doing?
I'm doing very good, thank you.
Good.
I feel absolutely fine. I mean, I did until Joe got here and started coughing all over the shop.
I just, at some point, again, apologies, listeners. Maybe you should have sat this one out, Joe. But at some point, I'm half expecting you to, you know, do that thing like in a movie where someone who's had a bit of a cough for a while just splutters a load of blood all over the computer screen. That would be really bad.
Alien.
Please don't do that. Have you been infected by the alien?
Maybe. It's possible. I don't know. I've been like this for like... I haven't really recovered from when I was ill that other time.
You're always ill. Which time are we talking about?
I'm never ill.
You're 2 weeks into not boozing.
Yeah.
That's what it is, isn't it?
Your 100%. Body is like... Is...
Oh, it's horrible being sober. It's the first time I've been... sober in a while.
Oh, it's great.
Awful.
I love it. Joe Branton, apart from nearly dying of the sickness, how are you?
Oh, I'm so good. I'm so good because there are so many cool and awesome things happening in the guitar world at the moment. I'm really excited about this week's podcast because there's so many cool things to talk about.
This is episode 101, isn't it? We're one past the... So what are you putting into episode 101?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm just excited about a lot of the things we've got in the news articles. There's some cool stuff we're going to talk about Gibson today as well, which I think is really interesting and sort of a weird twist in the future of guitars. There's some cool stuff happened at work with some guitars that I'm going to talk about later on. Some people releasing stuff.
Shilling
the brand. Joe, it sounds like you're going to do too much talking. I think you should
relax. Well, before we get into it, I had quite an interesting week because I, for the second year in a row, went and hosted a talk at a place called Confetti College in Nottingham, which is a ICT college. So they do like computers.
Sorry. ICT.
Yeah.
Like iced tea.
Yes. Or information computer technology.
Communications
technology. Something like that.
It's not like a barista sort of thing for cold drinks.
Yeah, that's what they do. They just go learn how to make frappuccinos.
Right.
It's a technology college, basically. So they do, like, I guess they do like computer graphics and stuff. But they also do like music and music performance and stuff. And they had a thing called... what was it called? Industry Week, where they get people in to do talks from the said industry, whether it's they've got some people who, you know, do radio or they're doing talks with like games media. But the talk that I was hosting was Guitar Heroes.
You were hosting it?
It was, yes. Oh, yes. Cool. Yeah, I just sort of get up, say a little bit, and then I kind of moderate.
Because you were the least famous out of the four people on the panel.
Well, I'm not famous at all. That's why I'm hosting it. If I was famous, then someone else would be hosting it and I'd be doing the talking.
Mm.
I kind of get up. And the guitarists that were there were Mikey Demas from Skindred, who's a very nice chap. A guy called Aziz Ibrahim, who was the guitar player in the Stone Roses for a while when they were doing stuff on stage.
Such a solid name.
He's not a original member, is he?
No, I don't think so.
Because he's quite young. Well, you know, relative to the Stone Roses.
No, I think he's about the same age.
Really?
Yeah, he's probably in his 50s. I wouldn't like to speak for the gentleman, but I think he's sort of in his 50s. But he also had done a lot of sort of session work in the 90s, played with like Simply Red and a few other people as well. Really interesting guy. And then Andy James, who...
Simply Red?
Indeed, Simply Red.
Mick Hucknall?
Indeed.
Wine connoisseur himself.
Big Mick. Big Red.
I love and, Big Mick.
And Andy...
And Andy James, of course.
Andy James.
He's totally cool.
Who is a metal player who has his own ESP signature or LTD signature or both, possibly. And it was really, really cool. Three very different guitarists. Obviously, Mikey is, you know, Skindred are kind of a metal band, but they do all this other stuff as well. You know,
there's
they do
like some
reggae
stuff,
and, you know, he... So his rig on the day was Axe 8, the floor-mounted Axe FX. And he was showing me, like... how he uses the whammy and stuff in there.
Oh, that's cool.
He
used to or normally uses orange.
He normally would use orange for gigs and stuff, right. But just for stuff like this, you couldn't take an amp, really.
No, of course.
Although there were some oranges on the stage, but you couldn't plug them in. It all had to be straight into the PA. So,
oh, that's cool.
So he was using the Axe 8, and obviously he was saying about, you know, how it's kind of, for things like that, for little... kind of like teaching bits and pieces and, you know, that kind of seminar type stuff. It's made his life really easy because he doesn't have to take his full pedal board and, you know, he can just patch some stuff in.
I really like his guitars because he's a lefty. A lot of his guitars are Bitzer tellies and
yes
Bitzer straps.
Yes and no. So on the day he was playing his famous kind of 70s telly, which is the one that's had white paint sprayed all over it and then kind of rubbed off again.
But it's a Highway 1 net.
It's silver paint, I believe.
Yeah. I believe he was saying, because the Highway 1's are one of the largest necks that you can get from, or, you know, were one of the largest necks you could get from a production line guitar, and especially a left-handed production line guitar.
Yeah.
So I spoke to him a couple of years ago about it, and he was just like, I get one.
Get the Highway 1 next. Take the neck. Yeah. So he was using that, and also just a Les Paul. I think it was like a 50s tribute or something.
I've never seen him with a Les Paul. I saw a picture of him with that, and I thought that wasn't very Mikey Demas.
Yeah, well,
because he had that orange Strat he was playing for a bit as well.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a Les Paul. He didn't actually use it. He just used the telly in the end. And obviously he's done some stuff with Manson. Manson have built him some guitars. So I think he's just got prototypes of those at the moment, but didn't see those on the day. So that was cool. A real kind of really modern setup, but using kind of vintage gear. He's not what I would call a traditional guitar player, though he does the big riffs. There's a lot of other stuff going on as well. Aziz Ibrahim was, for someone who I guess I would describe as a slightly more traditional player, although he played a load of stuff, he's a session guy, had one of the biggest pedal boards I've ever seen. Unbelievable. I couldn't even name the stuff that was on there. There was a lot of Old Blood Noise endeavours, I don't know exactly what he was using.
That's cool.
The one thing that was interesting that he was using was something called the Wet Box. Matt, you probably know what that is.
From Gig Rig.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a blendable, well, it's like an effects loop switcher with an expression pedal on, so you can mix wet and dry signals, or you can mix like a distortion into a delay via an expression pedal. That's quite a cool little thing. I'm surprised you don't see more people using that. It was a bit similar to Pigtronics did a pedal called the Keymaster.
They did, which was an envelope controlled.
No, the Keymaster was just a parallel or series effects loop switch that you could blend between the two. You're thinking of Zvex did a pedal called the Loop Gate, which was an envelope controlled loop switcher.
Wasn't there also something called the Envelope? Was that a Layla product?
That was a Toadworks product.
Which was an envelope-controlled effects loop. So when you hit the strings harder, it brought in the effects loop, which is really cool.
That is very, very interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you could do mad things. Like, imagine if you put a whammy in there with an octave up. You could just be playing normally, and then you hit the strings, so it opens up the envelope, then it brings in the octave up.
Wow, that's
And I actually looked into that the other day, and I don't think Toadworks exist anymore.
I haven't seen anything.
I think they've been rebranded.
Who are they now?
I was just trying to find, because I remember just looking at it the other day and then I completely forgot.
Matty, do some research and I will. I'll finish. The
they are called 10 Effects.
There we go.
I mean, that's definitely going to be harder to come up on a search engine. I'm looking for 10 effects. Which ones? Well, distortion, delay. And the pedals don't look anywhere near the same. I think they've basically completely rebranded it, which I saw something similar today on eBay. There was a Strymon, damage control timeline, which was the timeline before Strymon.
Yeah.
And I was just like, my God, they did a good job of rebranding and reboxing their pedals because they had four before.
How much would that go for? How much did the damage control go for?
It's still on there at the moment, but it's not very much. I'll have to have a look into it, and I'll find it on my watched items.
Is it the same pedal, or did they change anything?
No, I think they. Well, those ones actually had a valve in them.
Oh, God, really?
So all those damage control pedals had a valve in them. Because actually, if you look on the power supply of a Strymon, it does say damage control ink on the back.
But that's probably still the parent company.
I can't imagine they used the same DSP chip inside. But it had MIDI, it had like all the same sort of features, had quite a lot of similar sounding algorithms, but I don't know how overall similar it was. I mean, the back panel looks almost identical. So I'm sure they repurposed some of the original tech into that. But it's currently on eBay at £90.
There we go. Could be a bargain for someone. So yeah, just to finish off. So Aziz Ibrahim, really cool. What I really liked about it was he was talking about what guitar he uses, and as a session guy, you'd think, oh, we'd use something like really flexible, and you know, something that would, you know, maybe a Strat with like a, I don't know, HSS to get. No, he was using an airline sort of like hollow body, but not F holes. Sort of. Right. It kind of looked like a oversized Les Paul. Two P90s. And he said, yeah, I'm never going to change them. No point. They sound really good. P90's a P90, innit? None of them sound better than any other ones. So, yeah, I'll just use this. 400 quid guitar, job done. And he sounded amazing. And he was using Kemper, as was Andy James, was using Kemper as well. He didn't really... I think he had a whammy on his board and a tuner, and that was it. Then it was straight into the Kemper. He is a very different type of player from the other two, in very precise.
Very tech.
Very clean. Not clean as in the guitar sound was clean, but in terms of his playing, very dead on.
Very noise gated. Yeah, he has quite a large sort of YouTube following as well, Andy James.
Yeah, and runs his own sort of guitar school, apparently. Yeah. That's what his main thing is at the moment, the Andy James Guitar Academy. So, yeah, it was cool. Three very different guitarists. Great questions from the audience there. And I think the plan is to get the audio from the full talk and put it up in the podcast feed. So,
oh, cool.
That'd be cool. Yeah, it's like nearly 2 hours long, so...
How did it compare to last year? Was it the same group of people? Was it like the same students and stuff?
No, different students. Although I recognised a couple of faces, but I think it was like it was mainly like the first year, so it was like a new group of people. I mean, we took the questions in advance, so it wasn't like there weren't any like awkward silences, and in fact, we went over time by quite a lot because there was a lot to talk about. But so last year was Mikey Demas again, Bernie Torme, who was Ozzy's guitar player for a bit, and who else? Oh, a guy called John Fair something, John Fairhurst, who was like a blues player, and he was mainly acoustic, so there was a little bit less to talk about that time around, because he was like just a straight blues player, really.
Right.
Whereas this was like super diverse and talked about gear and stuff, so yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, having three people that do so much different stuff must have actually made that quite an interesting
discussion. Really good. Three different techniques and three different sets of influences and stuff, so
but three very similar amp setups.
Yeah, well, we were kind of talking about this, and like I actually got the car up with Mikey up to Nottingham, and we were just talking about everyone is switching over to digital setups now.
Definitely.
Like everyone is going Kemper or Axe-FX. There's not one of those big touring bands that aren't using a digital setup in some way.
It's because they're really good this time around.
Well, and they're just really easy. They're just really easy.
Are they though?
Well,
have we been blinded? No, we haven't been.
Well,
they're
no, because
really
you got to think people said exactly the same thing 20 years ago when everyone had massive rack units. Then everyone went back to valve amps. Is it just going to come full circle and in 20 years we're going to go, can't believe everyone
had
Kempers?
Don't say it, Jay. Oh, go on then.
What were you saying? Oh, don't know. You're not allowed to say it. No catchphrases. The thing is, would your average punter in the audience be able to tell if you were using an Orange or a Marshall, you know, full valve stack, or if you were using those models on a Kemper, would they be able to tell the difference? What the difference that it will make is you setting up and the amount of roadies that you've got to take with you and all the faffing around that a valve amp causes.
Look at you boys coming around.
I know.
I understand it. I do understand it, but I don't see why. I still don't see why you would use it in other than the logistics and Joe Branton. You of all people should hang your head in shame.
I hate light amps.
Like, I don't understand why you would go for something like that over the real thing. And I'm sure, you know, there's people yelling at me at home.
You're completely right.
I think both, really. I think the Kempers, Axe-FXs of the world have their place, and they're very, very good. But I'd also think, you know, if you had loads of money and you're in a touring band for the first time around, you probably would buy loads of gear. But actually, one of the best sounds, and almost like a hybrid, that I heard this week was I actually spent a little bit of time with Rabia, and he plugged in his Victory V40 straight into the Two Notes Studio, which is their Two Notes cab simulator and load box.
Yeah.
So he could crank the amp, but then only drip feed the sound to two monitors. But the advantage of that two notes out rather than our one is you can run two different cab stations in stereo. So you can vote ahead into two cabs, but one could be a 412 and one could be a 112 with different mic placements. And it sounded absolutely brilliant. And he said live, they just use that now. So they'll take an amp, they'll take their amp, plug into that. The sound guy takes DI feed because it sounds as good as a mic'd cab. And then they just have an in-ear feed.
Yeah,
so they don't even really need cabs on stage now. And I think that's a great way to get the best of both, really. A valve amp that you can crank.
Yeah.
But you've kind of got the flexibility of loads of different cabs, loads of different power amps, and it makes it easier for live use as well.
I guess the other thing to bear in mind is that, you know, something like the Axe FX will do all your effects as well. So if you're in a band, for example, that triggers from Ableton, if you just want to be on stage thrashing around playing the guitar and you don't want a board on stage, but your music is effects driven, you know, you wouldn't be able to do that with, you know, taking a Marshall or, you know, taking out even the setup that Matt suggested. You know, you'd still have to have a pedal board somewhere where, you know, if you've got something like the Axe FX, you can do all your pedal changes via MIDI synced up to the and your amp changes and everything as well.
For sure. I don't think that we're at a point where that's mass market quite yet.
No, it's definitely not.
I think for I absolutely agree. I think for the setting that you were in at the weekend, I think that makes complete sense. I really do. And you know, even for bands of a certain caliber, you know, of a certain level, you know, I understand why Skindred and you know, Dorje and like all bands like that who are like headline bands,
if you can rely on a PA
completely. Whereas the and you know, not that I'm trying to make this about me, you know, but you know, the sort of shows that are the sort of gigs that I'll play are likely to be in the back room of dodgy pubs.
Well, yeah, I agree. And like, the same for my band. I would never want to tour with something that was dependent on the setup at a venue.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for that reason, valve amps are king.
That is the difference. If you've got someone doing front of house sound and you've got reliable PA and stuff, then yes, I guess Axe FX is the way. But even the PA that was at this Confetti, which was just basically a small house PA, sounded really good with the Axe FX and stuff.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Should we dive head first?
Oh, I'm really excited about doing some nudes.
Good. We're all excited about that too. So first up on the news, this isn't actually in the running order, but we're going to talk about a big thing that happened today, which
this afternoon,
yes. Which was, I don't actually have the details here, but we'll kind of, and we should be careful what we say because
in an article.
None of us are lawyers, though. We don't know the ins and outs of how this all works.
Yeah, okay. I'll be careful what I say.
Yes,
that's
indeed.
What you meant.
I'm always looking at Joe Branton. Gibson, yes.
Gibson.
So JHS, John Hornby Skews
have bought Gibson.
No, that would be weird. John Hornby Skews, who produced the Vintage range of guitars, and Gibson have been at loggerheads over the rights to use the body shape,
and the headstock shape as well.
So it came out today that the ruling was settled. Was that right?
It's difficult to say. I mean, we saw an article on MI Pro today that seemed to be quite vague, and it also said that a lot of the details are confidential. But as far as we could tell, Gibson had sued John Hornby Skews because of some of their guitars were copyright infringement on some Gibson guitars.
And, specifically body shapes, well, which has never been before.
So it was body shapes and headstocks is what it said.
Headstocks is
one of those completely. Now, what JHS argued, or what the JHS lawyers argued, was that these body shapes were more or less in the public domain. You know, other people have been using them for the last 60 years or whatever. You know, they don't see why.
They claim that the original designers have been lost, I think is what they...
Right, okay. So there's all this.
It's important to know that the Les Paul isn't a shape.
Well, I was
going to
say,
that...
this is what... And like I say, I mean, I have no idea. I've just read this article and, you know... But it looks to me like maybe Gibson have settled...
Yeah.
Because the MI Pro article says that they are retaining the rights to the headstocks and the body shapes of the ES models, the SG, the
Explorer,
and Flying V.
I think maybe there was one more as well. Maybe it was a...
No, I know that
they
was
say
it.
They say in the article article that there was 6 copyright infringements, but they only list 4 body shapes. Right, ES, okay. SG, Flying
With
Clear,
the ES, so, I guess, is going to consist which of makes a me few body shapes.
Well, that's true. But yeah, which makes me think, though, that maybe, you know, that they found a middle ground in that, like, you know, it's very difficult to argue against the point that if what JHS are saying is, well, look, why are you suing us for this? Look how many guitar companies are making Les Pauls.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very, very difficult to argue against that, I think.
So
maybe Gibson have said, okay, look, you know what? We've lost the bat. People are still going to buy Les Pauls from Gibson because we're Gibson.
Yeah.
But Flying Vs and ES models and SG models as well, it's like, they're still ours. We're keeping them. Thanks very much.
I do think that ES models is the one, though. That's the one that could cause them, depending on how much control this and how much variation there is within that.
But this is my
Eastman
question.
Ibanez.
Yeah, this is my question, is that how close can you be to that design? We've seen it with Fender headstocks in the past that, you know, Fender have got control over that headstock shape. That's why companies have to do weird and wonderful headstocks on their Strat copies. Because as far as I'm aware, Matt, you probably confirm this, it fell down that Fender have control over the headstock shape but can't control the body shape.
That was down to because of how popular the body shape was. And I wonder whether the reason that they've managed to copyright the bodies of like ES, SG is because they're less popular in their exact form, where lots of people do Les Paul in its exact form, and probably they've done it too much. So you're like, you can't copyright that body shape. But if you look at a vintage V6, it looks exactly like a Strat. It's just the headstock is slightly different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas if you look at a vintage VS6, which is their SG, it looks exactly like an Epiphone G400.
Yeah. 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 So,
I don't know. I'd imagine it's, I'm sure it's pretty complicated, overcomplicated from what we understand, but they are still listing them on their website, but I don't reckon that will last much longer.
So my questions are, how close do you have to be to the Gibson body shape for you to incur this? Secondly, will Gibson enforce it across
brands, or are they just brands? They got something against vintage?
Well, and basically, what does that mean for people like ESP, who do like a metal version of, you know, a Flying V? You know, how close can you be? Is it the V shape, or is it the rounded corners? Could you get away with the pointy Flying V?
One thing's for sure is it's a massive sort of change in the precedent of what guitar companies can do, and I think we're going to see people possibly treading a lot more carefully.
Well, and as far as I understand, like, copyright law and, you know, how these things are intellectual properties handled, Gibson effectively have to defend this now.
Yeah.
So that if other things come up, you know, if other brands do it, Gibson have to challenge it. Otherwise, if they don't challenge it, then people can just keep doing it and doing it.
Right. Which is, we talked a couple months ago about
pedal train boards.
I was reading something on Music Radar or on the Fretboard. It was on one of the forums.
Yeah.
About how someone was kicking off about how they had ordered a cool looking pedal board from some startup company. And the company managed to make like 100 pedal boards or something before they got shut down by Pedal Train. And people were saying, like, oh, you know, what are Pedal Train doing? You know, why don't they go after the other companies, blah, blah, blah. And the thing is that they have to continue to go after everyone.
Yeah.
Because if they say, well, we'll let that one slide,
yeah,
the courts can then, someone can then come back and say, like, well, look, you didn't have a go at these people. Why are you having a go at us? You obviously don't care about your copyrights and that, so we'll have them. Thanks very much.
Yeah, yeah. You have to kind of constantly challenge it, otherwise you can't let it slip.
I mean, so one thing that immediately came to mind when we were texting about this earlier was how when we went to the Birmingham Guitar Show the other week, and, you know, we saw all those Tokai models.
Yeah.
And those Tokais, you know, even...
Well, Tokai are the same as vintage. Well,
exactly. Completely. I mean, and the top, like, even the headstocks were the same.
Yeah.
You know, the headstocks were the same shape and everything. It's like, I just thought it was weird. Yeah. Really weird.
Yeah, so I'm not sure where this puts us in the future. I think it's going to be an interesting couple of years if Gibson are enforcing this, because, you know, even the metal brands...
What's that other one? Buddy.
Buddy?
Harley Benton?
No.
Buddy?
But Bernie.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're still producing guitars. I think they're like 70s and 80s stuff.
But I mean, in Japan, there's companies that are producing effectively Gibson Les Paul Customs that look exactly the same. You know, does it? Will it affect them? I don't know. I'd love to know more details, but I've got a feeling this is probably all we'll ever get.
The article very ardently states that the a lot of the details are confidential will remain so.
So I guess something to keep constantly reporting on. If we suddenly see that Ibanez don't do the ArtCore series anymore, or you know, I mean, I can't think of other people
I would assume that, like, if what Gibson are arguing is that they're retaining their body shapes, you would have to expect that they would be okay. Well, here's the measurements of the body shapes, and there's probably going to be a bit of, you know, a bit of give either way.
Yeah. Well,
but I can't imagine that they can be too.
I'd imagine it's more complicated than that. It's,
well, maybe.
Could a customer be confused by it? That's generally, as far as I understand it,
right?
That's the yardstick.
Because art cores don't generally look like.
But
could
a customer be confused by that? And I think that it's, you know, it has to be a fairly, it's kind of like an average consumer. And, you know, if you're listening to this and you're kind of an IP lawyer and you're shouting at us now, do get on the Facebook group and kind of tell us what you think the ins and outs of this are, because I would love to speak to someone who deals in this kind of territory and tell us what the kind of precedent is for this, because I actually don't know.
Laurie Anstis, who is a one of our executive backers, is an employment lawyer, I think.
That's so probably not the same.
It's not the same, that's, but like, I mean, he's, like, he's better. He's better than four geezers who used to work in a guitar shop.
Well, probably. It's like when you're, you know, like your dad's mate or something is a divorce lawyer, but you need to get your, I don't know, your will sorted or whatever. He could do it. It's fine.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely no idea. Anyway, before we get into any legal trouble, let's move on to the next bit of news this week. Brand new Strymon pedal. Matt Knight, tell us all about it.
Yeah. It just seems like more and more now people are waiting till after NAMM to release new products. So the Sunset Overdrive follows on from their other one recently, which the name has...
Riverside,
that was right. Maybe they're going for some sort of like theme here, I don't know. Basically dual overdrive, but with more gain, basically. So the Riverside was much more of a kind of cleaner, sort of lighter overdrive, where this is three sort of more distinct overdrive circuits in one. Same sort of control set, same sort of ideas that it's an analog JFET input, but you've got digitally controlled sort of like tone stack, so that will move to give you the ideal setting depending on where you set the controls. It should be quite nice. I've heard a couple of the demos. They had quite a lot of demos ready to go on the day of release. But it was nice because it's one side is a booster, one side is your overdrive circuits, and you can alter which one goes into which. So, yeah, optimized stacking. So A into B, B into A, or what I thought was quite cool was A and B running in parallel.
That's pretty cool.
Do we we know how much kind of how popular the Riverside has been?
Because
I haven't seen it on a lot of boards.
It's such an expensive pedal, and that's kind of the problem. Like,
yeah,
like who uses a drive pedal? Like, you just use the drive on your amp, don't you?
Well, I guess a lot of people use drive pedals and different fuzz pedals.
I think less and less now, actually, because I think so.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here.
I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Many people are making what they call like pedal platform amps. Like, look at Wampler. Obviously, they've made a really simple amp that's designed just for taking pedals. And I think that's the way that people are going, rather than cranking up amplifiers. But, you know, the Riverside is £300, so it's definitely.
And you think that's how the overdrive market is probably the most saturated pedal market. There's so much to choose from. And you think of like pedals that we were rating in like Gear of the Year was stuff like the Soul Food, which was £50 and whatever it was.
And the X5 Golden Brownie.
Oh yeah, probably still like one of the best drives we've ever heard.
Even the more expensive stuff. Like, I'm really into that Pedal Pal Effect JCM 800 emulator, which I'm using at the moment, and even that, like, shipped from Argentina, I think it comes from. I think it's Argentina. It's a South American country. I think it would cost like £140, something like that, and that is incredible. It does seem, like, hand built, all analog.
I suppose the thing is, you're paying a lot for the tech, though.
You are, but do you need that in a drive pedal?
How much was the Roadrunner?
Well, the Roadrunner was £200.
Okay.
But I suppose with this kind of falls under the same as, I'm trying to think what else. It's like the Chase Bliss stuff. So it's like you've basically got an analog pedal and a digital pedal in one.
Yeah.
So
there's no denying the tech's amazing.
Yeah. So I think that's where a lot of the price is coming from. But I think as well, I've seen a few pop up on pedal boards, but I think Strymon are starting to take like a small dip in popularity. I'm seeing a few people on forum saying, oh, I'm not so sure about this, or I'm not so sure about that.
I love the bus guy. The bus guy is starting to, really.
Yeah, that's weird, man. Yeah, really weird.
No, honestly, if you just search the forums, people are really, really kind of, I think the timeline seems to be the one. And I wonder whether that's just because it's reached its like saturation point in the market, because it's been out for so long. And so many people have it that it's almost having that problem that it's too popular.
Timeline 2, that's the next one. T2, you could say it was Judgment Day for Strymon.
That did happen with the Eventide Space a bit, though, didn't it? Because sort of everyone got that sound and everyone got used to... You could hear it. You can hear an Eventide Space on a record when it's used, and you know it's that. And it almost becomes... You can't make it your own because...
Do you know what it's the time for? Return of the DL4. Wow. Oh, yeah.
There's no return. That's always there.
There was an article that I read on Reverb a little while ago. I think it was at the start of the year. And it was about 2000... Like, their stat... I mean, this is great. What a great job. Someone was compiling stats on how fast and how much pedals were selling for secondhand on Reverb.
Right.
And with Strymon, they were the third fastest selling brand on Reverb.
Outside of pedals, so in total, or just within pedals.
I think secondhand pedals. Secondhand pedals. So the average Strymon pedal was on Reverb for 61 hours.
Wow. Okay.
Before it got sold.
Right. What's the time now?
The only two brands that sold faster were Atomic and Endangered Audio Research, which I don't know about.
Probably either, both down to them not having very many.
Yeah, completely. Another stat that they've got up here is actually the used to new price ratio. So the Big Sky, the Flint, and the Timeline, all in the top 10, selling for 90% of their new value. Wow. Well, so, like, you know, you say that these companies have sort of, you know, like Strymon are sort of maybe had their day. I don't know if that is the case, really.
I was going to say, keep that page open, because this week's Patreon topic is biggest eBay bargain.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
maybe some of those stats can fit into that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, another drive pedal from Strymon. Mm. Who knows whether this one will catch fire?
We'll
Not
see.
Literally, but whether people will, you know, whether it will spread like wildfire.
It is weird. I kind of feel like maybe Strymon sort of left it a little too long before doing a drive pedal.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they became known for...
It's a tougher market, though, isn't it?
No, I don't think it is. I think it's an easier market.
But people expect Strymon pedals to be like £300, £350.
Sure, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's easy to go, here's this delay pedal.
Yeah.
This has features that no one else can do or has done, and it can do all this for you. And
I think for the money, the Chase Bliss one is way better.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
you get effectively, really? Especially if you run a MIDI setup, you get 127 different drive pedals.
Yeah, so, it's pretty pretty mad. And it, obviously, you know, it's like half the size. It's like a, you know, a regular MXR kind of size.
And it's basically the same price.
Yeah, yeah.
Really.
The thing that I always think about drive pedals is anyone can make a drive pedal. You know, we see so many startups. We've got a wall of pedals behind us where, you know, most of them are different varieties of drive. And for the price of, let's say, the Strymon, you know, you could get probably half of that shelf. Like, you could get, you know, the Bright Onion.
But also...
How much is a Pelotor? You know, like a Cool Fuzz. Yeah. You could get a...
But things like Positive Grids do... They do a pedal of their bias effects range. So and it is about £300, but you can buy that and then have any of their existing patches built in. And okay, it's digital, and okay, yeah, there might be that question of analog versus digital, but for the same money as you can get the Strymon, you could buy the Positive Grid pedal and have any drive pedal you want.
Yeah.
And when you decide to change your sound, you just change
just
it.
Push a button.
Yeah.
Yeah. Matt Knight, talking about pedals, tell us about the Dwarfcraft Devices Super Wizard.
Whoa, is this a pedal? I thought it was an amp.
No.
Oh, sweet.
Super Wizard. So this follows on from their other pedal, Wizard of Pitch. I like Dwarfcraft. They've made some cool stuff, but they also, to me, make some stuff that's like almost beyond like wacky. It's basically a short kind of like slapback style echo. I don't use the word delay because I don't think it does like the loads and loads of delay trails. Pitch shifter. And like glitch pedal all in one.
Okay,
right. Now, this sounds great. What are you talking about?
Yeah,
Matt? This
I mean,
sounds
it,
great.
It, but that's the thing; it sort of sounds great, but then you I think it's one of those pedals that's then like totally impractical. like, you know, I think I think the thing that's let it down slightly for me is I watched their like preview video before they took it to NAMM, and I don't know if they necessarily thought about the setting so much, and I was kind of like, oh, it just didn't really sell it to me. But I mean, it's got a couple of cool things, like it's got a switch that basically samples it like a freeze, so you can then mess around with the controls and it'll kind of like change the sound. There's like a pitch shifter in it, and then you've got an insert jack for other effects, so you can feed like a delay in and you can control the sounds with like a delay pedal that's running through it. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of cool, but I don't know how maybe practical it is. And it's also, I think they're going to be expensive. I think it's going to be about $300, $350.
Sheesh, that's a lot of money, but it sounds good, you know.
Yeah.
Dwarfcraft,
I think it's unique, definitely.
Dwarfcraft always kind of bring the goods when you're after something weird, don't they? And like you said, what's the other one called? The Wizard of... No, this is the Super Wizard, is
it? Wizard of Pitch.
Yeah,
Wizard of Pitch was their other one. I mean, I think they make some really good... I really do think they make some great pedals, and I think some of them like seem like awesome. I think some of them are just like, I just don't know when you would maybe necessarily use it. But some of the fuzz pedals they make are like absolutely incredible.
Yeah, some of the best and weirdest in the world. Joe Branton, tell us about the PRS Reclaimed Wood Models.
Well, do you know what's cool about this feature in the podcast? Is it's not the only thing that PRS have released new this week.
Ah.
They are just about to. There's nothing on their website, but I'm sure it's fine. They're just about to... No, it's definitely fine. It's definitely fine because we're putting...
Yeah, maybe don't say that. If you're not sure that it's fine and they're not on their site, let's not say that.
Okay, all right. Well, there's something else happening which is really
awesome.
Then
talk about it next week. Talk about next week. Save it for next week. Save it for next week. Tell us about what they have actually announced this week.
I'm sure it's fine. But anyway, okay. PRS have announced their limited edition reclaimed wood guitars.
Yes.
My goodness, jumping on the bandwagon.
Save the planet.
Well, this is becoming a very common theme, isn't it? Because, of course, with Fender, we've had... I think Fender did it best.
Yep.
Sorry.
Because, okay.
Are you trying to stifle a laugh? No. Is that what it is?
No,
I think Fender...
just like...
No, I mean, don't get me wrong. Fender...
A
really good company, and the reclaimed wood series that Fender did, I thought was brilliant because they had like a story with each one, and like, you know, there was the bridge,
there was the barn door.
That was really cool. That there was like there was a bit of a story with each.
Well, there is a story with these if you watch the release video.
Well, I didn't. Mark just picked me.
I thought you knew the deets.
No. I knew the deets about the other thing.
Oh, yeah, well,
which is equally as exciting.
Matt Knight, fill us in on the deets on this, because Joe Branton clearly knows nothing, and he looks like he's about to keel over.
Yeah. So these actually, the one thing that's always really annoying about these guitars is that they're all so unique that you might have to go to a couple stores to get one. It's a bit like the Taylor GS Mini Coas. It's just like the colour and the figuring so different on every one. It's just like you could get one out of the box and be like, oh, it's the perfect one for me, or you could get another one. So if you pre-order one, which you're probably going to have to do because these are going to be limited, you're never going to be quite sure how it's going to turn out. But the buyer for PRS guitars, and he's been the buyer, like the wood buyer since day one, sourced these from the Amazon, and they were basically old farmhouses.
He bought them on Amazon?
from the Amazon. They're like Amazon hardwoods, basically. So because they're because they're tropical hardwoods, they resonate much better than a lot of the kind of Native American woods, and they generally figure much better as well. I'm wondering if part of it's also down to the fact that they're probably trying to introduce new woods that maybe aren't rosewood as well.
Yeah.
Get people kind of turned around to the idea that you can have different fretboard woods.
That's 100%. That will 100% be part of their reasoning.
I think every company's going to be striving towards that. You know, the builders that we talked to at the bass show last weekend and the guitar show the weekend before that,
it was interesting hearing what ACG were saying about how rosewood's just been a name for many years, and about how the sort of the quality of rosewood that anyone's been sourcing has been
deteriorating,
rubbish for a long time. But it was just, you know, you try being the first company
to say we're not using rosewood.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
I mean, Gibson did, didn't they? There was a huge backlash.
People didn't like it too much.
Exactly. Mm.
So, Matt, what guitars are available in this series?
So they're doing the Vela, and then their CE semi hollow. And what I like is some of the tops have got like nail holes in. They've all got kind of really nice sort of, like, everyone's like definitely got a little bit of character. It's a bit like when Fender did the redwood tellies. They're only going to make about 600,
cool,
I reckon. Obviously, each one's going to be completely different. All the body woods, I wouldn't even Peroba Rosa, I think is what they call the body wood, basically means pink wood, I think, in Portuguese.
Okay.
Which they reckon that was one that used for all the like farmhouse exterior, and then all the fretboards are made from a slightly different type of wood, which make up all the wooden beams inside.
If you go to the PRS website, there's pictures of the farmhouse that these woods are taken from, and it's just like some old shack, basically. And they've gone, tell you what, let's make that into some guitars. They look awesome, really good. For someone who doesn't particularly like the look of PRS normally, the sort of flamey tops and stuff, these look really nice. Really well put together finish guitars.
And they've still got some mahogany on there as well. So, yeah, they should be really nice. $12.99. Don't know when they're landing, but I reckon they'll be quite nice guitars. I mean, I'm really into the Velo. I think it's one of my sort of the standard models, one of my favourite guitars for about £1,000, I think.
I've got a feeling that this is the release that I'm thinking about.
Okay, I thought you said SEs. Do you mean S2s?
Well, you've just said the thing now. I can't believe he said the thing.
What
are these?
Yeah, but you were just wrong. These are
CTs.
S2s.
Ah.
Aren't these in the S2 range, though, because they're the Velas? It's the CE model and the Vela.
No, S2s are slightly different.
Okay, fine.
Sure. We'll see. We'll see. We'll wait and
we'll see if some other mysterious PRS news that we definitely haven't talked about comes up next week.
Okay.
Good, good. Should we, before we get into trouble, should we dive into some...
news.
No, the other one.
Question.
Yeah, very good.
Well, there is actually a couple of other little bits of news that we should just... that I think are worth a mention. I know we don't mention acoustics much, but this is pretty cool.
What if GAC bought on a mega deal?
What are you punting out on the old mega deal this week?
It's nothing like that.
Knocking 70 quid off on the old mega deal this week?
I'm really excited to hear about these faith guitars that you're about to...
I have nothing to do with the discounts that we offer. Anyway, Taylor have released their new Academy series of acoustics, which I think is properly cool. So they're like the Academy
series...
Yeah, they are cool. I just wondered
whether you think they're cool.
Yeah, they are really cool. They're sort of premium featured Taylors, but made with like, you know, just a sort of a burnt branded rosette and everything, and sort of very unfinished. So a lot of companies like Faith and Simon and Patrick have done this sort of thing before in order to keep costs down. But it's the first time Taylor have, and they're very, very cool. They even have like little cutouts on the side of the body where your arm would rest, where you play. Like, it's really weird, but they're properly cool. But more importantly than that, GS Mini bass.
What?
Yeah, that is cool. I saw one of those at NAMM, and they are wicked.
Yes.
They are awesome.
There has been one sitting in my office for about a week. Now, they are £699. But
definitely worth it.
It's a whole new price. Yeah, yeah.
Right, wow.
It's a whole new scale length. It's a whole new, even shorter scale length. So it's almost a travel guitar.
This combines all of the rubbish things that you're into
at the moment. So the strings, you can't even get strings for it. Didario are doing specific GS Mini bass strings because they're... the scale is so short and the tension is so low that you can quite happily sort of bend the G string almost to the position of your E.
Wow, you never want to bend the G string to your E. Never do that. So have you played one then?
Yeah, there's one in my office. I've been playing it a lot.
Okay. Does it sound any good?
I mean, yeah, you know, it sounds... I have to say, kind of for what it is, like... I'm unsure of what acoustic bass's purpose is.
Yes, me too. Has it got onboard electronics?
I bet it won't.
I don't think so, no.
Wait, no,
GS Minis don't.
No, so no, this doesn't either. No.
Yes, GS Mini E's have inbuilt.
Yeah. Well, this
I'm pretty sure it's got inbuilt.
It says in the title, Mini E Bass Electroacoustic Bass. So it does have onboard electronics.
I'm pretty sure because I actually plugged one in at NAMM.
All right. Well, that's cool. That's good.
What scale length?
I'm glad.
I don't know. Super short.
Matt saw one briefly at NAMM. Jay and I have never seen one. You've got one next to your desk that you admit to repeatedly playing.
For about a week.
And we all figured out quicker than you that it's an electroacoustic.
Well, I didn't have anything to plug it into. It's in my office.
Yeah, but you held it in your hands.
Surely there's a hole there, though, that you put... What have you...
I was just playing it.
What scale length is it?
Well, to be fair,
then?
It does go into the strap button, so you probably didn't realise.
Well, there you go. There you go, exactly. So, yeah, the thing is, I kind of think, like, if you were looking for something, a short acoustic bass sort of thing, if the idea is that it's convenient to sort of put it away and have it for recording and stuff, you know, I'd probably still get one of those Carlo Uke basses.
Oh, I want one of those so bad.
Yeah, they're great. They're a
Speaking
really good
of things that you can't get strings for.
Yeah. Trying to make your life as difficult as possible.
But those rubber strings, they'll last forever.
Yeah,
you probably never need to replace them.
No. Exactly.
Just
I do always worry about instruments,
odd strings
that don't have like easily accessible strings. Mm. It's always something that's concerned me. Mm. Like whenever people were coming into the shop trying to buy Steinbergers.
Yeah.
Like I'd always be like,
no, double ball ends are quite accessible.
They are in 2017. They weren't in 2009.
Yeah.
And I'd always just be like, just please be aware that if you break your string,
you might struggle.
It's not going to be. It's not just a case of popping down the road. Like, and I'd be like, I highly suggest that you buy like 10 sets of strings off me. Please don't think that this is me trying to upsell you. I just you know, I want you to not, you know, a complete nightmare. And not having a set of strings that's on the market, to Dario having to make something specifically for them.
Well,
it does worry me a bit.
Talking of strings real quick, I've had a few sets from, and I mentioned it on the Facebook group, Stringjoy. And the amazing thing about those guys is that they offer like standard sets, but you can also completely customize your own set, save it, and then order it on a subscription.
Oh my God.
Oh, that's cool. Oh my,
what website?
Stringjoy.
Do they do bass ones?
They do bass strings, I think.
Oh,
but they're
yeah.
definitely worth checking out, especially if you're in America, because you can basically set up how many strings you want and how often you want them. And then it's just like a paid for direct debit subscription service.
Oh, that is the best
idea
ever.
But you can
ever.
Completely customize your
why isn't
sets.
That, why isn't that just how it works?
Well, it's a bit more. It's only just. We're only sort of just entering yeah,
right.
that area
right.
subscription services. Yeah. We promised that we do a load
yes,
of
yes,
questions.
Yes,
so
but we need to talk about one more thing.
Oh, Joe Branson.
Just one more thing. We got Ormsby's in.
Yes. This
isn't the GAC podcast anymore.
Oh,
mate.
I know.
Well, you say we've got them in. Well, I think we should do that next week because we were going to do that as a brand of the week. We've run out of time. There's too much good news. Let's dive into.
Can I at least say about
no,
the Ormsby
just
base?
Say the word questions.
Questions.
There we go. You should be the one who wants to get out of here tonight because you're dying.
I just wanted to talk about the Ormsby base.
We'll talk about it next week. There we go. A little tease for everyone listening. Joe, next week, Joe will talk about the Ormsby base. If that's not going to put butts in seats, I don't know what will. So, first question comes from Joe, who says...
Talk about the Ormsby base.
No.
Okay, Joe.
Joe says, not particularly flush at the moment, but might need to purchase a giggable and affordable bass rig. Happy with head/cab or combo. Budget about £300 to £350 maximum. Anyone got any ideas of something? That's a weird sentence.
Yeah, that is a weird sentence. £300 to £350 is not a lot to get a giggable rig.
Okay.
Do you remember how this question would come up a lot in the past?
This is the no man's land of bass amps, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? But this question used to come up, and because it's the no man's land, the only thing we could suggest was the TC BG250, because
yes.
it was around £350. But I'm loath to ever suggest that, because I don't really like it.
Okay.
I don't think it's a very good sort of combo, and I think it whilst it does do gigs, it does it by the skin of its teeth.
What about the biggest of the new Orange Crush bass? Wasn't there a Crush 100
yeah,
or something?
Yeah, it's 100 watts though, and I still kind of don't think that's
has
quite
it got
enough.
DI out?
I'm not sure, probably. I imagine so. What? They're very good, but I mean, I'd almost be inclined to. Does it have to be a full giggable rig? I mean, you know,
yeah, I mean, you could. Why couldn't you go for like a Mark based Nano Mark 300?
Yeah, I was actually exactly the head I was going to suggest because, like, super affordable, $299.
Is there?
Really
there's
good.
No. That's just a head, though.
Yeah,
that is just a head. But I reckon you could pick up a cab for £50 on eBay.
Yeah. You probably could. You could pick up like an old like PVTNT or something. What were they called? 115X or something.
Yeah,
the big. PV15. I mean,
because
not...
that would actually probably be a good way to go, because that way you can spend a bit more money on the head. I mean, just looking here, quick search finishes in 19 hours. Marshall Jubilee base cab,
£100. Nice.
4x10 yeah, Marshall base cab, £150.
There are some good options, but kind of new. There's not a lot that goes for that much money. I mean, I think like the Ashdown Rootmaster stuff is really good. They do combos, but again. You're looking at sort of £400, really, not sort of £350.
I reckon, get that little Mark head, £299. I reckon you could pick up a PV cab for £50, plus those 115s and 410s that I've forgotten the name of, TX115 or something like that. They offer them in 4 or 8 ohm. So if that head goes down to 4 ohm, you could draw the full power if you've got the 4 ohm cab. And those 4 ohm cabs are probably quite cheap because they're not super useful. Because at 4 ohm, you'll be hard pushed to find a head that will go to 2 ohm if you're using two of them.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, yeah, a lot of people buy them and go, oh, I bought the wrong thing. Oh, I'll sell it for £50. And I know that when they were new, I think when I was still working in the shop, we were clearing them out at like £99.
I'll tell you what, a good brand that are currently doing a bit like of a clearance on, actually not with my shop, so this isn't a shout out, just because we. Sold out of them, but a brand that are doing a bit of a clear out of a range is Edom with their E-series stuff,
And they do like a load of like 210 and there's a 115 combo that they were, you know, they had had the arse knocked out of them. The price on those amps was ridiculous by the end. So you could probably pick one of those up for a couple of hundred quid.
Matt Knight, you seem to have an idea.
Yeah, sorry, the delay is so much I can't tell what people are talking. That video of delay is not good. There was actually a PV 1x15 4 ohm cab on eBay for £60 with 1 day and 17 hours to go.
There
so just £10 over the budget, but maybe that's the solution.
There we go. I know my stuff.
Just talking about Eden for a sec there.
Yeah.
So if they're sort of just shipping everything out.
Yeah. Well, that's just the E series.
Right. Okay.
So they're still doing like the WTX series, and really their flagship stuff is now their. Terra Nova. Oh, there we go. Yeah, they're Nova series and they're Terra Nova amps. They do a couple of heads of those. That's the flagship thing. They announced those like last year, just before the London Bass Day last year, and sort of they're still going strong. Really good, a really strong like Mark Bass competitor.
And that's all right. Okay, so what are they not really doing anything entry level anymore then?
Well, I guess they're making room for something else that's entry level.
Code. Maybe
code base.
Maybe code base.
Base code.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Listeners, if you're not aware, Eden are owned by Marshall and operate out of the same warehouses in Milton Keynes as well. So
let's do one last question. This one comes from Paulie, who says Kemper or Helix. I'm looking to upgrade from my Line 6 Live X3 this year that I use mostly for playing live. I'm looking for something that can also do all the reamping magic with. What would people recommend themselves? Matt Knight, what would you say, Kemper or Helix?
If you're going reamping and you want really pro amp sounds, I think Kemper is definitely the way to go over Helix. I think Helix probably excels more in the effects category and the amp modelling is great, but Kemper definitely have a way better interface when it comes to amp modelling.
They do.
Just in terms of the overall sound.
It does, like on the amp head itself. But kind of the options for Helix and the way Helix is laid out on the floor, I think is so usable and so user-friendly in comparison to Kemper.
But it depends what you're doing with it, because if you're just recording, like most people now are sitting in front of a desk and plugging into a guitar amp and recording a great guitar sound, and then maybe also at the same time recording it DI and dry and then sending it back through, having it on the desk and being able to tweak it like a real amp, I think has more advantages than going through digital menus. So I think it kind of comes down to what you're doing, because Helix would probably make more sense if you were maybe playing live, because obviously you've got all the controls there.
Yeah,
and there is actually
so.
A foot controller for Kemper now. But I think just if you're recording or doing a lot of reamping, I think the amp modelling itself is better.
Right.
Maybe not necessarily the interface, because I think that's some of it's personal preference, but I think the actual amp modelling is way better.
Okay,
After hearing a couple of them this week, I'm going to say Kemper.
Really?
I've not spent that much time with the Helix, but I think the Kemper sounded so good in this session I did in the last week. That's what I would say. Just sounds so organic.
That they sound very good. Also, I'm coming from a perspective that I spent a lot of this afternoon with a Line 6 Helix, and I really liked it. I didn't realise how intuitive.
Yeah,
it's so intuitive.
Yeah.
I had a real good demo with them just before I left the shop, actually, and I was really, really impressed. Really, really impressed. I think that they are. I personally would go Helix. I think that, again, as a sort of everyday gigging musician, I think that that's more useful and more user-friendly than a Kemper. I think if you're playing in a, you know, going right back to what we said at the start of the show, if you're playing in like one of those, a band that's of a certain level and you know that you've got everything nailed down exactly, whereas I think if you're someone a bit more like us and maybe you want to tweak something mid-show, I think that the Helix is a better band.
It's definitely better for that.
Speaking of, and I know I'm getting into a habit of doing this, recommending other podcasts, but I was listening to the Crimson Guitars podcast
Don't
this morning.
Oh, yeah.
And they actually, Ben wasn't Ben is unwell. So their podcast, they're nowhere near as I'm going to bring it back to us now. They're nowhere near as fast paced as we are, because the podcast that they just released today or yesterday is their Birmingham Guitar Show roundup.
Wow, okay.
And Ben was not well enough to be in the podcast because he'd worn himself out. And that was like 3 weeks ago.
All I'm saying is we're recording this. What's the time now? 5:45 on a Monday night. Evening. If you're a Patreon subscriber, you will be getting this podcast at about 12 o'clock tonight. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
Anyway, it was Toby and James, I think.
Yeah, it's James.
Toby and James were the guys on the Crimson Guitars podcast today, and they spent quite a while talking about Helix versus Kemper.
What did they come out with?
I think they were like, in terms of usability,
Helix.
Yeah, but yeah, they've got a Kemper that they use in the studio. So yeah, I really think that if you've got 1200 to 1400 quid to play with, I think that whichever one you'll go for, you'll be happy with. And yeah, I think it's really interesting that it really is like, if you're a home bedroom guitarist who wants to do home recording, Kemper.
Yeah.
If you're doing smallish to medium sized gigs, Helix. And then if you're in a big band, it's Kemper again.
Yeah.
I just think it's really funny that they hit those two...
It's just how they're laid out, I guess.
Completely.
That's the thing. Anyway, we are up over time. Joe Branton is... Yeah. You seem like you're about to cough your lungs up.
I am.
So with that, we will wrap this episode up. As we just mentioned, if you want to get this podcast nice and early, you can do by going to patreon.com/... Guitar Nerds.
That was a good segue. I liked it.
You've totally ballsed it up now. Patreon.com/Guitar Nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the podcast that we do. At the $1 tier, you get the podcast nice and early and ad free. At $5, you get an extra half an hour every week. Plus, you get the bonus stuff that we do, Joe Branton's Rant On, Jay Cross Crosstalk, which is happening.
It is.
Which is his producer, Jay, chatting to producers about guitar sounds. You're going to record some of that this week, right?
I think so, yeah.
Cool. And some interviews that Matt's got lined up with some famous American pedal manufacturers and stuff, all happening very, very soon. We've gone off the ball a little bit with getting this stuff into the Patreon feed, but we're recording loads of stuff this week to kickstart that all again. And at the $10 a month, you get your name read out on the podcast, like these people have. What song are we going to do?
Della Grinch, Chris Corrizzo, DeJoy, Steve Merkel, Blair Don, Scarlett, Muncher, Andrew, Macro, Mark, Cross, Jenny Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Pitt, Paul, Corrigan, Jack, Godfrey, Will, Blair, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quinn, Phil Thompson, Zoria, Moon, Gravit, Colin Anderson.
Moog and Colin, I hope you're proud of yourself. You two have just killed
broken
Joe.
Branton. Breaking Branton. It's the new show.
Well. Breaking Bow.
Big shout out to whoever's running Bow Banton on Instagram. Do check it out at Bow Banton. It's great. You can follow us as always at Guitar Nerds on Twitter, at Guitar Nerds on Instagram. Do join the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/Guitar Nerds. Forum. Thanks very much for listening this week, and we'll see you next week.
Farewell, everyone.
Goodbye. Thanks.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com.
Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.